Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Lynn Lancaster and David Stillman, authors of The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace, Part 1 of 2. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Lynn Lancaster and David Stillman, authors of The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace, Part 1 of 2. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Lynn Lancaster and David Stillman, co-founders and partners of Bridgeworks, share with us their insights on successfully integrating millennials into the workforce from the perspectives of the traditionalists, boomers, and Gen Xers already there, as well as the incoming millennials themselves. Their invaluable insights and practical hands-on solutions provide a method for bridging the generation gap to create an organization that is more productive and successful than ever before. And so now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Lynn Lancaster and David Stillman, co-authors of The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace, and co-founders and partners of Bridgeworks, a company that advises leaders, managers, and employees on how to conduct business more successfully by bridging generation gaps at work and in the marketplace. Lynn is co-author of the best-selling business book, When Generations Collide, Who They Are, Why They Clash, How to Solve the Generational Puzzle at Work. Her keynote speeches and workshops have enlightened and entertained high-level audiences from many of America's best companies, including 3M, American Express, Best Buy, Citigroup, Coca-Cola, Lockheed Martin, and Wells Fargo, as well as from numerous public sector and nonprofit organizations. David co-authored When Generations Collide with Lynn in 2002. He has appeared nationally on CNN, CNBC, and The Today Show, and has been featured in such prestigious publications as Time Magazine, Entrepreneur, The New York Times, and USA Today. Lynn and David, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan. We're so glad to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed your book, and it was particularly meaningful to me because I work with just a whole lot of great millennials in my place of business on a day-to-day basis, and really brought an interesting perspective to me and helped me recognize some things I guess I didn't fully appreciate before. So thrilled to have you on your show, and I think our audience is in for a real treat. To start our conversation, though, I've read a lot of books, and each one talks about the various generations, and they tend to define each one, and millennials being one of those groups, just a little differently. I wanted to start out with establishing a foundation for our conversation, for our listeners to follow, and ask if you would describe to us who belongs to the millennial generation, and what personal characteristics and traits do millennials share?
Great. Well, the way we define them is those being born between 1982 and 2000.
Okay.
Based on the last census in the United States, there were about 76 million millennials, but we have a new census coming on in 2010, and we believe they should be over 80 million right now, which means they're actually going to top the baby boom generation in size, making them the biggest American generation. And with that, carries a lot of power and influence, spending power and decision-making and just plain the influence you get from having large numbers.
Oh yeah. And as a Gen Xer, I'm one of those guys that feels kind of squished in the middle between the baby boomers and the millennials.
Well, I'm an Xer too, but that's not a bad thing. Because I think, you know, we're finding that Gen Xers, because they're smaller in number, you know, maybe sometimes have more options, don't sometimes have the same competitive drive as the other generations, and are finding their own unique path in the workplace.
You know, that's so true. In fact, you know, looking at the boomers and the competitive nature that they've adopted, because here they went to school in droves and it was competitive just to get attention in school. My oldest daughter's a millennial. We have trailers lined up on brand new schools. So they're in that same competitive setting to a large degree here as they're growing up as well. One thing I did want to ask you before we go on too much farther, though, is I hear the term millennials and Generation Y, and I was wondering if there was a difference between the two.
So they actually are the same generation, but when we started our business, mm-hmm. what we found was we didn't want to just give them a label. What we found with Generation X is they didn't like that name, and mm-hmm. Generation Y just suggested that they followed Generation Xers. And so we are early on hearing from the millennials that they wanted to be their own generation. And our motto has always been, it's events and conditions that shape a generation. And mm-hmm. so the millennials at the turn of the century, it was just a very huge influence on that generation and a defining moment. And it's a name that has stuck. So okay. It is the same generation, but we call them the millennials.
Okay. Okay. Well, and David, that's a great segue into the next question I wanted to ask. And I recognize that there are certain significant world events that tend to shape a generation and the values and the behaviors that members of that generation share. What are some of the key environmental factors associated with the millennial generation that really have served as those defining moments that are shaping their values and behaviors?
One's obviously technology mm-hmm. is a big influence on this generation. I mean, if you think about it, technology has brought them to any corner of the globe with a push of a button, and they truly are living that notion of a global village. But we also can talk about how technology and the media, a big influence, is beaming all these world events into their bedrooms since birth. So this is a generation that's also been exposed to so much more at a young age, 24 hours a day. And on top of it, another big key influence on this generation is a lot of those big events aren't necessarily happening far away from millennials. A lot of them are happening, you know, right in their own backyard,
sure.
like 9/11, Columbine, Virginia Tech. Some big, scary events that are happening close to home.
Absolutely. Lynn, I'm sorry, did you want to add a little to that also?
Some other ones you might want to think about, globalization and access to remote places around the world. This is such a globally aware generation. They've been able to travel more, but they've also been able to reach out and communicate with somebody in another country at the push of a button. They've also had a lot more exposure to diversity. In fact, 37% of millennial teens are non-white, as compared to just 25% of baby boomers when they were teenagers. So we've seen an increase in diversity and increased exposure through school and daycare, through television and the media and chat rooms. And so it's not only a more diverse generation, but it's also a generation that appreciates and embraces diverse experiences.
Yes, certainly. And in The M Factor, you highlight seven trends or characteristics that are associated with millennials that have resulted from the environmental factors that existed during their formative years. Would you mind describing what those trends are and why each is important?
Well, one, we've been sort of charmed by, and also we found ourselves shaking our head, is the increased role of the parents of millennials in their workplace lives and their work decisions. This is a generation that's been very close to their parents, and they use them as confidants and even skilled consultants to help them make decisions around school and avocations and interests. And as David said, which I love, he says, when they head off to the workplace, they're not cutting the umbilical cord. They're actually buying an extension so mom and dad can go along. In the survey we did for our new book, The M Factor, with our survey partner, I4CP, nearly 40% of all respondents across all the generations said they had witnessed a parent getting involved in an employee's career in a way that seemed out of line. So that's something new, and some of that parental involvement is really helpful and valuable, helping millennials look for jobs or get their hands on applications or distribute their resumes, coaching them for interviews, helping them put their best foot forward. Those are great things, but it does cross a line sometimes when mom or dad calls the human resource department to find out why Johnny got a bad performance review. So we're seeing some interesting new situations with that.
Yeah. And I've been fortunate not to to experience that quite yet, but
It's kind of fun and interesting. We'll have to talk a little bit more about that. Another big trend that's kind of on everybody's lips is this topic of entitlement. Is this generation really spoiled and entitled, or is that a misnomer? And what do people even mean when they call a generation entitled? We tried in our book to get to the bottom of that, to figure out what it even means, and to help people get past it and just roll up their sleeves and get on with working together.
Mm-hmm.
A third trend that we took a look at is the millennial search for meaning. This is a generation that says, wow, if I'm going to work as hard as I saw my parents work, I really want to try to do something that has meaning for me. And they're not a generation that seems to want to pay a lot of dues and wait around a long time till things get more meaningful. They really seem to want to make a difference right from the get-go on day one. And companies are struggling with the idea of, wow, how do we make entry-level jobs seem more meaningful? How do we help millennials feel that they're involved in the core work of our business right from day one?
Mm-hmm.
So that search for meaning, according to, in 2009, the Kelly Global Workforce Index found that 51% of young workers surveyed said they were prepared to accept a lower wage or a lesser role if their work could contribute to something important or meaningful. And I think that's significant. That was right in the heart of the recession, and those younger workers were still saying, I would take less if I could find more meaning.
That is a not just revealing, but a really powerful statement of a difference in the values of various generations.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of my drive has always been rise up the ladder.
Right, right. And they're saying, well, even if I'm on the first rung of the ladder, I still want to know what this job means to the corporate goals, to my community, to my career, to my client. They want to know what it all means and how they're making a difference.
Right, right. David, did you want to talk about the others of the...
Sure. Another big trend we call is, you know, great career expectations. And what we're finding is millennials come on board, and there's a big mismatch on both sides of that. A lot of times companies have done a great job wooing a millennial, and they can make the whole recruitment process and even the onboarding process really exciting. But then, you know, millennials get there, and they're just not as turned on or as excited, and their expectations weren't necessarily met. And yet on the flip side of it, we're hearing from a lot of boomers, traditionalists and Xers, who are looking at these millennial resumes, and they've painted a home for Habitat for Humanity. They've been to all these different countries. They speak all these languages. They've got all such unbelievable life experience, but that doesn't always transcend into work experience. And so they show up and they think that they're really going to be ready to hit the ground running when their expectations haven't been met, only to find out that the millennials need some basic training, and it was not a good match. So we dive deep into that chapter about managing expectations on both sides.
Sure.
The next one is what we call the need for speed. And you somewhat addressed it before, Nathan, when you said, you know, your generation and boomers and traditionalists followed a very prescribed path up the ladder, a lot of dues paying. Well, this is a generation that just everything's been ramped up. If you think about it, and I addressed it before, this influence of technology and getting you know, your finger on any piece of information with the push of a button. It's really increased their need for information at a faster pace, feedback at a faster pace, their career path moving at a much faster pace. And we need to manage those, you know, that need for speed. At the same time, I do think we can tap into millennials and speed up some of our processes. So again, working through both sides of it, the need for speed is a chapter that we think sheds light on how each can learn from each other.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The next trend, and this is a big hot button today, and that is around social networking. And if you just think about it, from Facebook to Twitter to some of the unknown ones, Babu and Ozone, you know, the less known, it's amazing to us how many times we walk into a client or we deliver a keynote address and it's just a hot button. And I think a lot of people feel that, oh, they're just on Facebook, you know, wasting company time all day long. Yet it really, in a lot of ways, millennials are using social networking to help the workplace. They're mm-hmm. using it truly as a network to tap into unbelievable resources. And so on both sides, work needs to be done to help employers understand how you can use social networking. And I think millennials also need to step up and explain how they are using social networking so that it doesn't become something that they continually get accused of wasting company time with.
Well, certainly. And just for a moment on that subject, you know, I know in my company, for one, not only do we have a Facebook fan page and Twitter and all that, but it's our millennials that help put our recruiting videos together that go out on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just phenomenal. They're leading the way for recruitment through social media.
What's unbelievable is that I was just with a client today, and millennials came up to me and they said they don't let us on Facebook. You know, we're not allowed to use Facebook during the day. And it was unbelievable, this dialogue that started, and I don't know if you remember, Nathan, but, you know, when extras were coming to the workplace, there was a lot of companies that wouldn't allow access to the Internet.
Oh, yes. Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Do you remember that? And so
I do.
We've been down these paths before, and with technology, you know, it finds its right place within the workplace, but it's very interesting that social networking, we're seeing it once again, companies fight employees, and millennials are just scratching their heads saying, I can't believe they wouldn't give us access to Facebook.
Oh, yeah. And I distinctly remember those arguments because we had true business needs. I was in the Navy and then worked at a commercial nuclear power plant, and just things like going to weather.com to see storm fronts coming in, that was really important to whether it was driving the submarine or operating the power plant. You couldn't get access to that because they were cutting off the Internet.
Yeah. You know, in our national survey, we across the board, the older generations were twice as likely as the millennials to be concerned that social networking tools were creating a big distraction at work,
mm-hmm.
where millennials see these tools as helping them get the job done.
Absolutely.
So our chapter dives into those differences and how we bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
And the final trend, it's a great one. It's around collaboration, and I really have to hand it to baby boomer parents who I think have taught their children the power of collaborating. I think they really collaborate well with their children, as well as millennials have had coaches, mentors, teachers, rabbis, priests reach out to them, and this generation has just really learned the power of collaborating, which is a great thing that comes to the workplace. However, they're bumping up against a lot of baby boomers who don't have the time
mm-hmm.
for all this collaboration, a lot of Gen Xers, a lot more autonomous and like to do it at their own pace and their own pace. They're not used to managing this collaborative workplace. And so collaboration is a great thing, but it's definitely colliding with the other generations.
Absolutely.
So those are the seven trends that make up the M factor and how the millennials are rocking the workplace.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Lynn Lancaster and David Stillman for being with us today and sharing their insights on integrating millennials into the workforce and bridging the generational gap. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Lynn Lancaster, David Stillman, and The M Factor at www.strategydriven.com. generations.com. Until next time, so long.